Sandy Logan has been the casting director, or was the casting director for the Renew Shakespeare Company, for several seasons, I think, for us. But you go way, way back with Reed Martin to UC San Diego. And now you are casting big-time TV shows there in Hollywood and working with big-shot actors. Is that all a bit of a come-down from your work with the Renew Shakespeare Company?
Nothing will ever top the Reduced Shakespeare Company's open calls for people that want to go on tour and do the complete works of Shakespeare and the complete history of the Bible.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 433, American Acting Crisis. Sandy Logan is an L.A. casting director who casts films, television, theater, and even vaudeville comedies like the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Now, since last week's podcast was all about the 99-seat theater issue in L.A., this week's episode runs the risk of being more sort of inside L.A. baseball. But since I know our podcast listeners include actors, directors, and educators on both sides of the pond, I thought you'd be interested in this conversation about this alleged crisis in American acting.
Now, so as a casting director now, you don't have to do open calls anymore.
I don't, but, you know, I find when I'm especially casting a pilot, my pre-reads are pretty much open calls. They're not really open to anyone who wants to show up, but I really try to read as many people as I can. So during pilots, I'll spend Saturdays and Sundays in the office reading 60 or 70 people a day, just to make sure the agents feel like they're getting their passion project, their passion actors in, and I'm seeing the people that look the most interesting. As you know, Austin, and Reed knows, I'm a huge supporter of theater, so I like to bring in a lot of theater people, people that are trained in the theater, people that grew up in drama school, and you know, that's a big passion of mine. I feel like those actors, they come from a different background training-wise and a different set of tools in their toolbox that some of the younger actors arriving in Los Angeles really are coming here to book a pilot, book a television show. Yeah. And so I like to just keep it open and see as many of those people as I can. I'm just finishing a pilot now for NBC, a new drama. And one of the series regulars is a lovely actress named Malzahn Makar, who comes from Chicago theater.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that even before you said you're one of the few casting directors I know, at least in LA, who regularly goes to the theater in LA.
I was there twice this weekend.
So you're finding actors with chops, you know, who genuinely have the training and the chops. Well, I've wanted to interview you for a long time for the podcast, and so the perfect excuse for this came up because you posted a thing on your Facebook page, an article, a kind of a blog piece from an acting teacher, I guess, and the title was called "A Crisis in American Acting." And there was so much that I liked about this essay, not the least of which is that it begins to address the pet peeve of mine, which is all these British actors coming over, taking our women, not just taking our roles, because really the roles are open, but playing American characters in a way that Americans would never or rarely be hired to play Brits. And so this was an interesting article for me to read. But why did you post it? Why did it speak to you?
Well, you know, I get this conversation happening with a lot of actors, and I, having done this, this is my 19th pilot season. I've been doing it almost 20 years, and a lot of my friends are actors now, and agents, and managers, and they all say, "Gosh, I can't believe all these Brits and Aussies are coming in at pilot season and getting these roles." And I have this discussion all the time because, look, I don't think they're getting all the roles. Let's look at the top five television shows that are on the air right now. NCIS has no Brits or Aussies on it. The Big Bang Theory are American actors. Castle, American actors. So CSI, American actors. So when I say to these friends who bring it up, and I was at a party 2 weeks ago, this exact conversation came up with an actor, and I said, name me 10 British actors who got those big roles. And he was able to name five.
Yeah.
And so you see Dominic West in The Affair, and you see Jason Isaacs in Dig, and you see, you know, Matthew Rhys on The Americans, which, by the way, is a Russian anyways, played by a Brit. So there are a few that you see, and they stick in your head because they say, oh my gosh, all these Brits, here they come. And the reality is there are a few, but those guys, when I'm sitting in casting sessions, and like I said, I just finished a drama pilot, and we had a lot of actors come in. I saw thousands of actors. And the Brits and the Aussies are coming in. Their material is memorized. They have read the entire script. They have worked on that material and made very strong choices. They come in prepared. When I give them an adjustment, they listen. They hear what I'm saying. If they're not quite sure exactly what I'm saying, they'll ask for me to clarify it. And then they'll do it again with those notes intact.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Americans are not. A lot of the American actors that are coming here to book a pilot, they're flying in from Miami or Chicago or Austin or Vancouver. They're coming to book a pilot. Mm-hmm. And they don't do the work. They don't have it memorized. They haven't made strong choices. As I start to give them notes, they just keep nodding their head. Got it. Got it. Let me try it. Stop. Hear me.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah, because they're not trained in the world of an actor's world. They're not trained at RADA or Lambda or British Academy or UC San Diego, which obviously is where my heart is, or Yale or Juilliard or Carnegie Mellon. They're coming from a different place.
Well, it's interesting. I watch the two things that stood out for me was, and I think they stood out in relief, is that in Selma, at least two of these quintessentially American characters were played by Brits, and in The Walking Dead, all these Brits doing Southern accents. That's just a thing that I laugh about.
Well, but I would throw back at you and say Renee Zellweger was Bridget Jones.
Yeah, she and Meryl Streep was Margaret Thatcher. Those are the two.
And Gwyneth Paltrow in Shakespeare and
Those
Love.
Those are the three.
I can name about 20, but okay, we'll take those three for now.
Okay. I absolutely hear what you're saying, because in those open calls, and even in Reduced Shakespeare Company open calls, you know, when we're meeting new actors, we get people who haven't read the script, don't know really what they're auditioning for. And it's one thing to have found out it the night before, which is frequently I would get a call at 5 o'clock saying, okay, you've got a 10:30 appointment tomorrow morning to read for a lawyer. Well, I'm probably not going to have time to read the entire script, but if it's for a lawyer, I could probably do that. But if it were for something larger, more substantial, I would absolutely, please send me the whole thing. Give me a day or two. You absolutely want to do that. So I hear what you're saying. So the thing that turned me off from this essay, though, the thing that leapt out at me, is that he says, I believe the actor, American actor, is lazy, which is a, you know, you say that in Chicago and you're going to get the shit beaten out of you.
Think it was a blanket statement that was incorrect.
Yes.
I think that there are lazy actors. I don't think all actors are lazy, nor do I think all American actors are lazy. I saw some of the best performances of my life on this pilot.
Yeah, I bet.
Some of the most outstanding performances I've ever seen, and people that ended up testing for roles.
Cool.
From actors who were ready to go, prepared, intense, had read the script, had made choices, had broken it down, and had objectives and actions and all those things that you actors do, which is incredible.
Yeah.
I also had a lot of actors who got the appointments on Thursday or Friday to come in on Monday and still hadn't read the script.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. And the other thing he says before that blanket statement, he says there is one major weakness, and that's training. There are good training programs here in the States, and there are good training programs in Britain. But I think where Britain really excels over America is that there are theaters all over the country where you can ply your trade. You can practice what you have been taught. And I think that's what, I think it's less about American actors being lazy than it is about American actors not getting to do what they do.
Well, the hardest part, I think, as well, is that and I say this to actors all the time, it's money. You know, these there's a big argument going on in Los Angeles right now, and we won't get into that because that will take up your entire podcast, about 99 seat theaters, Actors Equity now getting involved saying you have to pay minimum wage, which most of these small theaters are now going to have to close because they can't pay minimum wage. I saw a play Saturday night at the Matrix, which is a 99 seat theater, and there were 12 people in the play.
Yeah.
So that would take up half the audience to pay those, all of those people minimum wage for rehearsals and performances.
Yeah.
So that, I won't get into that whole article, but I'm really, really opposed to that because I also cast theater here in Los Angeles at a small theater, and we have to do 2 or 3 person plays because we don't have big budgets to do what the New York Broadway theater or even Looking Glass in Chicago does. Mm-hmm. And so actors are forced to not be able to do that craft. They're not able to take the time off from work to perform plays for $15 a performance. Yeah. And so they're not doing it at all. And instead they're working at bars and restaurants and catering jobs to make ends meet so that they can be available for auditions during the day. And I always say to actors, when that's the case, take 4 months off from this career. Go work 3 jobs, work 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. every single day for 4 months, put that money in the bank, and then come back out and do a play or take classes, scene study, on camera, audition classes, cold reading, whatever you need to do to sharpen your craft. You know, at the end of the day, as an actor, you have a skill and you have, for lack of a better word, a sport, like an athlete who's in the Olympics. And those amazing athletes that I have grown up watching in the Olympics, Michelle Kwan in gymnastics, Michael Phelps, I know he's got problems now, but one of the greatest swimmers in the history of swimming, these people, they do their athletic sport every single day of their life. They're out there in the pool 5 or 6 hours a day. And so that when a meet comes up, an Olympic pre-trial or whatever it is, it's another day in the pool. And actors in LA are not acting 5 hours a day so that when they get to that audition, it's just another opportunity to act.
Right,
they're doing nothing for 5 days waiting for an audition so that they get the opportunity to act. And that is a backwards way to do things.
I'm Deborah Zane, casting director for Ocean's 11, 12, 13, and Dreamgirls, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our 82-city UK and Ireland tour of the complete history of Comedy Abridged continues this week with performances in High Wycombe, Swindon, Cardigan, Brecon, Flaneth, Lee, and Camberley, then continues around the countries to Grantham, Harrogate, Solihull, Ludlow, Exeter, Galway, Newton Abbey, Downpatrick, Derry, Londonderry, Westacre, and Norfolk, Wakefield, Barnstaple, Blackwood, Chipping Norton, Pershore, Hounslow, Basingstoke, Guildford, Tenterden, Banbury, Derby, Bolton, Wolverhampton, Worcester, Dumfries, Stranraer, Oxford, and Wellingborough. Also in 2 weeks in the U.S., we'll be playing Manchester, New Hampshire, the MacArthur Theater in Princeton, New Jersey, and Frederick, Maryland. Plus, there will be more U.S. dates this summer and fall, which we will add to our website as soon as we nail them down. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
The industry has changed and the economy has changed to the point, and I'm not the first person to say this, there have been articles saying this for 10 years or maybe longer. What LA has lost is the middle class actor. I'm one of them who I could no longer afford to live in LA, and so I had to leave. So you talk about actors coming in from different parts of the country for pilot season. You know, there are folks who can't afford to live in LA year round to be available for all the auditions that happen. I'm waiting for the time when I can move back. So that's certainly been an issue. And I think it's contributed to the pool, don't you think?
Completely.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to, it's hard on your psyche as well to audition, not have an audition for a couple of weeks and then get one and not get it and then wait 2 more weeks and then have an audition and not get it. And then there's pilot season where you're auditioning every single day, but you're sitting in the waiting room and you're looking across from you. And there's the guy who was a series regular 2 years ago on Grey's Anatomy. And there's the woman who just did that great Sundance film. And there's the guy who did a 17 episode arc on Castle. And you get psyched out because you think that they have more skill, more resume, more potential, more pop, more better agent, better manager. They are telling you about the three auditions they had earlier that day. You had zero. And it's a psych out game.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, like I said, this pilot, I'm keep talking about the pilot because I'm still in the middle of it. We're just finishing up, but that it's been so recent in the last, obviously, 5 weeks of my life has been this pilot.
Right.
And out of all the people that tested, I think we had 7 people screen testing for this pilot who had never tested before because they're new, they're exciting. And I found them on Saturdays and Sundays, doing my search. So there's a great pool of wonderful, fantastic actors who just don't always get a shot. The good thing that's happened in TV now is the volume. There's so much television happening with Netflix and Amazon and Google and DirecTV and We and Pivot and USA and WGN and TNT and TBS and Lifetime and ABC Family and TV Land. I can go on and on of all these amazing, incredible shows being made for all these different outlets. And so those parts, they're now 3 times as many parts. And if you're doing 10 episodes on Netflix, you can't do another pilot.
Yeah.
So there's an abundance of work to be had now. And I think you will see when we finish this pilot season, everyone will look at those lists and say, wow, there's a lot of actors I didn't know before this pilot season who got really substantial, wonderful roles.
Let me go back a step and ask, because I could see that this essay speaks to a frustration that you have on your side of the table about, I don't want to waste my time bringing in these actors who don't have the chops or they don't have the skill or they don't have the aptitude to do the work. How much do you have frustration with the kinds of roles you're being asked to cast? Like, do the studios only want young and pretty 20-somethings, or do they want talented actors? Oh, and if they can be pretty, even better.
I don't think the pretty, it depends on what network you're speaking to. There are certain networks that definitely, you know, the CW definitely has younger, prettier girls and boys. You look at Vampire Diaries and Rain and The 100. There's a very specific flavor. But CW is also doing Jane the Virgin.
Yeah.
With lovely, wonderful people who are not necessarily, you know, the sexy size zero models.
Yeah.
And the lead character is pregnant for most of the season, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There is a push for more diversity in television. Empire obviously is a breakout hit. Blackish is doing great. My Sweet Show Cristela is doing great. Fresh Off the Boat with, you know, the Asian community. So there was a lot more diversity happening on TV. So there was a big push for that this year as well. Make sure that we're reflecting what's happening in America. But it's not necessarily the centerfolds anymore, the cover girls, the beautiful models. It's about great pieces of talent. And when you look at Viola Davis on How to Get Away with Murder, I wouldn't call her a model. I think she's was very risky in taking off all of her makeup and wig this year and just presenting herself as a fantastic, amazing actress.
Yeah, you're 100% right.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Now, if there are actors, directors, and educators out there listening, send me your thoughts about actor training and opportunities on both sides of the pond via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. I'd love to keep this conversation going. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, actor without a country Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Heather McFarfaraway, a Twitter follower who I hope is also a podcast listener, so she'll hear this. No reason, it is just random. Special thanks to Sandy Logan for taking time out of her busy casting schedule to talk to me. Special thanks also to casting director Debbie Zane. One of these days I'm going to interview her about casting the greatest movie ever made, Galaxy Quest. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener for 133/1299 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Do you think there will be roles for aging, graying, distinguished, waspy gentlemen who make most of their living touring in physical roustabout comedies.
I think what's great about aging, graying men who do roustabout comedies is that they can excel at comedy and drama. I find the best drama actors have a comedy background. So when I'm casting a drama, the first place I go is to the comedy crayon box and find out who out there, they know the beats. You look at Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie came from sketch comedy in London. He was amazing in house. And Eric Bana was a sketch comedy artist down there in Australia before he became the Hulk. So I love those people who understand the beats of comedy and can bring that to drama. That said, I think the parts are going to be much greater than anything you've ever seen in the world of television in 2015.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.